Okay, I guess 9:30 we'll start. So sorry about this. We did have a bout of COVID run through our household last weekend, actually. And so until next Monday, I'm in sort of self-isolation, but we're all fine here. And what I'll do today is I'm going to cover a new topic that's going to use the calculation of eigenvalues and eigenvectors that we've been discussing thus far this week. We'll see an application of that today.
What? I'm looking good. Oh, I was like, I didn't put it back.
Okay, so I hear a microphone other than mine on, so if you could please mute. You can, of course, interrupt me if you have questions, but otherwise I keep your microphones muted. All right, so plan for today is for me to discuss how to diagonalize matrices, which, let me get started and you'll see the purpose of it, and then we'll decide how, I'll show you how to do it. Okay, so what a diagonal matrix is, it's a matrix in which the only non-zero entries occur along the main diagonal. That main diagonal is that stretch of entries that run from the upper left to the lower right. So essentially, a diagonal matrix is where all entries are zero except from that upper left-hand corner down to the lower right-hand corner. And our interest in these guys is because, well, you can see from the form, they're particularly simple. And in fact, that simplicity is of great value. For example, if you have two diagonal matrices, well, normally to multiply matrices together, it's kind of a tedious calculation. You have to compute n squared different dot products, one for each row and each column of both sides. And so it tends to be a long calculation for a matrix of reasonable size. But if your matrices happen to be diagonal, then the computation of their product is really simple. Like entries along that main diagonal just get multiplied together, and you don't have to worry about the other entries in the matrix. So for example, let me see if I can do it with a mouse. This one entry, when you take the product of D and D prime, the only thing you have to be concerned about to get the new diagonal entry is the product of the corresponding entries of the factors. So that makes matrix multiplication pretty easy. Instead of having to do n squared separate dot products, you only have to compute n ordinary products, products of these numbers, lambda 1, lambda, and mu 1, lambda 2, and mu 2, etc. So that's one nice property. But in fact, it extends also to when you multiply vectors by diagonal matrices. Let me do a simple example on my pad here. Suppose I have a matrix with diagonal entries 0 and 1, and I multiply the first standard basis vector, so that would be 1, 0, by this diagonal matrix. So this is a 0, 0, and only diagonal entries. Well, what happens here is when I take dot product with that first row to get the first entry over here, I'm just going to get 1. And then when I multiply a second row, I'm going to get 0. All right, so that's one. And then what about the second? Here's the same matrix, 0, 2. What if I multiply the second standard basis vector? Now, the one with the only non-zero component is the second one. Well, what this is going to work out to be is you'll get 0 in the first slot. That's 1, 0 dotted with 0, 1 is 0. And then 0 plus 2, 2. And so what this is 2 times the second standard basis vector, and this is 1 times the first standard basis vector. What these diagonal matrices do to your very simple standard basis vectors is it treats them like eigenvalues. This first diagonal entry is exactly the eigenvector of the first standard basis vector with respect to this diagonal matrix. This the action of the same matrix on the second standard basis vector, well, It reproduces that standard Bayesian vector multiplied by 2, which is the second diagonal entry. So the upshot of this is that when you have a diagonal matrix, the way they act on your standard Bayesian vectors, it's simply by scalar multiplication. The standard Bayesian vectors turn out to be eigenvectors of a diagonal matrix, and their eigenvalues correspond exactly to the corresponding diagonal entry. This eigenvalue here, 2, comes because the eigenvalue of this diagonal matrix in the second column is equal to 2. That's why you get that factor. All right, so that makes it, this property, the way it acts on standard Bayesian vector, actually makes it easy to compute the action of this diagonal matrix D on any vector, right? Because we can take a vector, say with components V1 through Vn, and then we, let me use a mouse here. A vector with components V1 through Vn can be expanded in terms of the standard Bayesian vectors. Then the matrix multiplication can distribute over this sum of vectors. And what will happen is when D hits any of these standard Bayesian vectors, it's just going to pull out its corresponding diagonal entry. And then you'll still have the component of the original vector. But in the end, the calculation is just as simple. There's no real matrix multiplication. Well, it's hidden. All we really do is to compute this product of a diagonal matrix with an arbitrary vector D. We simply have to know how D acts diagonally on the standard Bayesian vectors, and then we get a quick computation of the action of the matrix D on the vector D. All right, so the moral of these two examples are that when we're dealing with matrices, as sometimes we must, it's going to be easier, at least computation-wise, and when easy computations often lead to intuitive clarity as well. Things are going to be much easier for us if the matrix you start off with is diagonal. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. So what we're going to talk about today is how do we make a matrix diagonal, or how do we convert a matrix into a diagonal matrix so that it's easier to deal with. All right, so that leads to the following definition. We'll say that a square matrix is diagonalizable if we can find an auxiliary matrix C that, by the way, has to be invertible, because you'll notice I'm going to multiply A by the inverse of C as well as by C. If we can find a matrix C such that when I do inverse C times A times C, I'm able to create a diagonal matrix D from that operation. And what follows, we're going to regard these diagonal matrices as the diagonalization of the matrix A. And the main point of today's lecture is to show you how you find such a matrix. And then once you've found it, you can convert problems about non-diagonal matrices into problems about diagonal matrices. Now, what's going to be required of that is we're going to need to, in order to find this matrix C, it's going to turn out that what we have to do is examine the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of the matrix A. Once we know those, we should be able to create the corresponding matrix C. That's going to be constructed from the eigenvectors of A. And the matrix D that results from diagonalizing A, that's actually going to be constructible from the eigenvalues of A. Okay, so let's proceed. To get this started, I'm going to first talk about some simple matrix multiplication identities. We know how to multiply matrices together already, but what I'm going to concentrate on right now is how matrix multiplication acts on the individual columns of a matrix. So suppose we have two square n by n matrices. And let's think of C, this matrix C. Let's express it, instead of writing down all its entries explicitly, let's just indicate the columns of this matrix C are given by particular column vectors. All right? So think of these lowercase boldface C's they indicate which column of a n by n matrix C we're looking at. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to multiply this matrix C by an arbitrary matrix A. And the claim is that the result of this computation can be carried out by operating directly on the columns of the matrix C. It turns out that the matrix A times C will be the matrix whose columns are simply A times the first column of C, the matrix A times the second column of C, etc. And so we can see how the columns of C are transformed when we multiply by an arbitrary matrix A. It's going to follow this formula. All right, so let me show you a 2x2 example that exhibits this behavior. Here's two arbitrary 2x2 matrices. I've got their entries labeled by their positions in each matrices and carried out the usual matrix multiplication by taking dot products of the first factor, dot products of rows of the first factor with column vectors of the second factor. There's the full computation. Meanwhile, if I take the same matrix A and I operate on the first column, C1, 2-1 of the second factor, we do that computation. It works out to be, well, A11, C11 plus A12, C21 in the first slot, etc. But notice that this column vector I've written down here is exactly the first column of the product I computed previously. And similarly, when I take the matrix A and I multiply the second column of the original matrix C by it, I do that computation and I reproduce the second column. Well, this is not so much a proof unless you understand how I actually computed this original column, the original product, the matrix A times the matrix C. To get these columns, what you do is you fix a column index of the secondhand factor, and then you, to get the row entries, you just take the individual rows of the first factor and dot it with that same column. So the columns, if once you fix a column index, what A does to those entries is just operates column by column. And that's what this identity is saying. To see how A acts on C, it suffices to know how A acts on each of the columns of C. All right, so that's one identity. A second identity, I want to show you how what happens to a matrix C expressed in terms of its column, what happens when I multiply it by a diagonal matrix. And now this time, I'm going to multiply from the right by a diagonal matrix. And the statement is going to be, well, what multiplying a matrix C from the right by a diagonal matrix, what that does is it takes the columns of the original matrix and it simply scalar multiplies those column vectors by the corresponding diagonal entry of the matrix D. So this first column of C, I've labeled it lowercase c subscript 1. When I carry out this matrix multiplication, the first column of the result is going to be the first diagonal entry of A times the first column of the matrix C. Similarly, the second column of the product, C times D, is going to be the second diagonal entry of D times the second column vector of C, etc. All right, so I have two matrix identities. Let me rewrite them down. The first one was, well, let's say C. We express the matrix C in terms of its column vectors. And then if we multiply C from the right, what we get is a matrix that's going to be A times that first column vector written vertically. So an n by n matrix times an n by one column vector is going to produce an n by one column vector that we can then fill in. And then the last component is going to be the original matrix A times the last column of C written vertically. All right, so that's one identity we've seen. If we write a matrix as columns, this is how a matrix multiplying from the left-hand side, how it acts on it. And similarly, in the previous seeding slide, or I guess in the current slide, if we multiply a matrix of this form by a diagonal matrix from the right now, what that does is it takes the original columns of C and it just scalar multiplies them by the corresponding diagonal entry of D, lambda Cn written vertically. All right, so given a matrix expressed in terms of column, we have these two identities. All right, so let me show you the utility of that. Well, here I actually prove this identity, but it's, if you work out a 2x2 example, you'll see it's also easily true. In the slides, I show in more detail, but it's basically you write a typical entry of this product. This is the dot product of the ith row of C and the jth column of D. That's how much what the ijth entry in the product will be. But if you work it out explicitly, what you see is that this ith entry of C is actually the ith entry in the kth column of the original matrix. At any rate, this identity holds. The jth column of the product is simply the jth diagonal entry of D times the jth column vector of C. All right, so here's my purpose of showing you those two identities. You can actually see from the notation part of my intention here. If I'm going to have a matrix that diagonalizes a given matrix A, what I'm going to want is an identity like this, where C minus first times A times C is equal to a diagonal entry. So I'm trying to find, for a given matrix A, appropriate matrices C and D so that I have an identity like this. Then I'll regard C as converting A into a diagonal matrix. Now, what this identity implies is, well, just multiply both sides of this equation by the matrix C. When C hits its inverse, it's just going to produce the identity matrix. And so all that will survive on the left-hand side will be A times C. But when C hits the right-hand side of this equation, when it hits D from the left, it's just going to produce C times D. So this identity that we want is equivalent to this identity, where we multiply the same matrix C either from the left by A or from the right by the diagonal matrix D. And now we'll employ these two identities. So what's going to happen on the right-hand side is because of the, now we can implement matrix multiplication from the right by having it, the matrix A act on the individual columns of A. The right-hand side here is going to be A times the first column vector of C, A times the second column vector of C, and the second column, etc. And similarly, when we multiply the matrix C from the right by a diagonal matrix D, we'll use this identity. And what happens is the resulting matrix is going to be the ith column is going to be the ith diagonal entry of D times the ith column of C. And now we compare both sides of this identity. Well, you see that A times C1 has to be lambda 1 times C1. In other words, that first column, C1 of C, has to be an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue lambda 1. Let me write it out explicitly. A times C1 must equal lambda 1 times C1, which means C1 is an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue lambda 1. And that's true not only of the first column, but it's going to be true for all the subsequent columns as well. The On the right-hand side, the columns here are going to be A times the columns of C. On the right-hand side here, the columns of this product matrix are just going to be scalar multiples of the columns of C by the corresponding diagonal entry of D, meaning the ith column of C is being multiplied by the ith diagonal entry of the matrix D. All right, so that's going to lead us to an algorithm by which we can diagonalize a matrix. What we're looking for is a matrix C that will convert A to a diagonal matrix. Suppose we have n eigenvectors of A. Let's just use those matrix to form a matrix C. But now instead of having labeling these columns by C, let me use the particular eigenvectors of A as columns. And then I'll use the matrix to construct the diagonal matrix D. I'll use, well, for the first column, I'll use V1 is an eigenvector with eigenvalue lambda 1. And so what I'll use for the first diagonal entry is going to be the first eigenvalue of the matrix A. Actually, what I really mean is the eigenvalue of A corresponding to this first eigenvector V1. The second diagonal entry of D is going to be the eigenvalue of A that corresponds to the second eigenvector that we've chosen for A, et cetera. And then we're going to have AC is equal to DC by the theorem. And so long as this matrix C is invertible, then I can take this equation, multiply it by the inverse of C, and I'll get the diagonalization condition I'm seeking, a way of converting the matrix A into a purely diagonal matrix. Okay, so that's essentially how we're going to diagonalize matrices. Given an arbitrary matrix A, the goal will be to find first its eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Once we've found those, we can use the eigenvectors to create this matrix C that will convert A into a diagonal matrix. And it turns out that the diagonal matrix that created that way, well, we will know that diagonal matrix as soon as we know the eigenvalues corresponding to our eigenvectors. The matrix C, we write the eigenvectors in a particular order. Doesn't matter which order, but we choose some ordering of these eigenvectors. And then what will happen is that C will convert A into a diagonal matrix. Moreover, we're going to already know that the diagonal entries of D are exactly the eigenvalues of A, written in the same order as we've already ordered the eigenvectors. All right, so let me do an explicit example. So here's a 2x2 matrix. In order to get this started, we're going to have to, first of all, figure out what the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this 2x2 matrix are. Then we'll use that data to construct the diagonalizing matrix C and the corresponding diagonal matrix D. So let's start. First, we find the eigenvalues of A. That's done by looking at the characteristic polynomial and setting it equal to zero to find the roots lambda that will accomplish that. Right? So here's the definition of the characteristic polynomial. It's the determinant of the original matrix with the diagonal entries shifted by a parameter lambda. So we can compute that determinant using the difference of diagonal products because it's a 2x2 matrix. We're going to work out to be it's upper triangular, so it's just the determinant is just the product of the diagonal entries. And what we see, since that determinant is already factored once we compute it, that the eigenvalues, the solutions of this equation, are going to be lambda equal to 2 or lambda equal to negative 1. All right, so those are our two eigenvalues, lambda equals 2 and lambda equals 1. So let me keep track of this data on our pad. A is equal to 2, 6, 0, -1 has eigenvalues. First one is lambda equals 2, and the second one is lambda equals -1. All right, that's the first half of the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. The next step is to find the corresponding eigenvectors. So, this eigenspace corresponding to the first eigenvalue, lambda equals 2, this is the null space of the matrix. Well, what I have to do is take A, then subtract that eigenvalue from its diagonal elements. So if it's the null space of this matrix, which is the null space of, upon explicitly computing, we'll have 2 - 2 = 0. That entry doesn't change. -1 - 2 is going to be -3. All right, so what happens? Oops, did I do that right? I did it right. What I didn't do is complete the calculation here. All right, so this is the null space of this matrix, but now let's put this matrix in reduced row echelon form. Well, that means maybe normalizing this first row so its pivot is equal to 1, and then using that pivot to clear out that entry. So this is actually the null space of 0, 1, 0, 0. Well, all I did here is I've gone to reduced row echelon form to simplify the calculation of that null space. All right, now what we need to do is figuring out the solutions of this coefficient matrix times an arbitrary vector x1, x2 is equal to 0. So what we see from this matrix in reduced row echelon form is that the first column lacking a pivot, it's going to mean that x1 is a free parameter, while the second column, or more specifically the second row, is telling us that the second component of a solution is going to have to equal 0. And so x2 has to equal 0, x1 is free, so a solution vector is of the form x1, 0, or x1 times this basis vector, 1, 0. So that's going to equal the span of the vector 1, 0. And the basis vector for this eigenspace is what we regard as the eigenvector of the original matrix A with eigenvalue lambda equal to 2. That's what this calculation has revealed to us. All right, now we had 2 eigenvalues. So what we now have to do is look at that second eigenspace corresponding to the second eigenvalue. We'll repeat the same sort of calculation. Well, let's do that. You're right, finishing up that first one. All right, here it is. So now we'll look at the -1 eigenspace. So I subtract -1 from the diagonal of A and calculate the null space of that matrix. Well, here's just doing that subtraction. And it once I do that, it's already in reduced row echelon form, so I can immediately figure out a basis for the solution set. It's going to consist of vectors where x1 plus 2 times x2 is equal to 0, or equivalently, the first component x1 has to equal -2 times x2. We get solution vectors of this form, or equivalently, an arbitrary constant x2 times this basis vector -2. So for lambda equals -1, a similar calculation tells us that V lambda equals -1, the corresponding eigenvector is going to be the vector with components -2, 1. All right, so we've now solved the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for this matrix A. And summarize our results. Here's A equals 2, 6, 0, minus 1. We have an eigenvalue lambda equal 2. The corresponding eigenvector, I'll call it B subscript 2. And that's actually the first standard basis vector. And for our second eigenvalue, minus 1, we have its corresponding eigenvector is minus 2, 1. All right. Now what we know is we can apply the theorem. If we're going to have a matrix C the minus first times A times C is equal to D, we need C to be made out of the eigenvectors of A and D is going to be formed from the eigenvalues of A. As follows. So C, what I'm going to use for the columns of C are going to be exactly the eigenvectors of A. So let's write them in the order that we found them. 1, 0, minus 2, 1. And now, I already know what this matrix D is going to be. Matrix D, the diagonalization of the original matrix A, it's going to be formed using the eigenvalues of A. The way I order those eigenvalues is I use the same ordering as I use for the columns. So the first diagonal entry is going to be an eigenvalue of A corresponding to this first eigenvector. So that's going to be negative 2. And then the second diagonal entry, the entry down here, well, it's going to be the eigenvalue of A corresponding to that second column of C. And there the eigenvalue was minus 1. Sorry, this was, the eigenvalue was 2. And here the eigenvalue is negative 1. So, in fact, this identity is going to hold for exactly these two matrices. What I'll show you that by direct computation now. So let's, here I've constructed the two matrices following our prescription using eigenvectors of A for the columns of C and using the corresponding eigenvalues for the diagonal entries of D. So I'm going to check this full identity here. So I'm going to compute the inverse of this matrix C using a convenient formula. When we were discussing determinants of matrices, we had a formula for calculating the inverse of the matrices using the determinants of cofactor matrices or determinants of minors of A. Here's what that formula works out in the case of a general 2x2 matrix. The inverse of the 2x2 matrix with entries A, B, C, D is 1 over the determinant of the original matrix times the transpose of the cofactor matrix, which works out to be D minus B minus CA. So in the case at hand, the determinant of this matrix C is going to be 1 minus 0, or simply 1. And then looking at what this inversion process does to the entries, it reverses the positions of the diagonal entries. Well, 1 is equal to 1, so it looks like no change here. But actually what I've done is I've switched these two diagonal entries. And then it also reverses the sign of the off-diagonal entries. So this 2 should have been minus 2 here, and the 0 should have been minus 2. Sorry. I think I've got that written wrong. I did reverse the sign here. This negative 2 has gone to 2 following what happened to the 1-2 entry on both sides of this formula. All right, so what I've got here, well, what I've got on the far right is the matrix I created from the eigenvectors of A. What I've got in the center here is A itself. And what I've got on the right here is the inverse of this matrix C. We multiply those together. And what had happened? As advertised, this triple matrix product, C inverse times A times C, has produced a diagonal matrix. And notice, going back to my pad here, it's exactly the diagonal matrix that was predicted from our diagonalization, from our eigenvector and eigenvalue, from a solution of the eigenvector eigenvalue problem from A. The matrix C that converts A to a diagonal matrix is indeed constructed using the eigenvectors of A, and the diagonal matrix that A is converted into, well, that corresponds to exactly a diagonal matrix whose entries are the eigenvalues of the original matrix A.
Professor, I have a question.
Yeah.
So can you explain again how you know which eigenvalue goes into which entry of D?
All right. So I'm going to fill both matrices out column by column. So I choose one of the eigenvectors of A. I write it as the first column. Let's hop over to D. We'll get that first diagonal entry by using the eigenvalue that corresponds to that eigenvector. So what's going to happen is the columns of C and D are going to be naturally correlated. What you're going to, you'll use eigenvectors for C, and in the corresponding column of D, what you'll use is the corresponding eigenvalue. So this goes into C, this goes into the corresponding column of D. This is going to go into the matrix C. This is going to go into the corresponding column of D. So you just you choose some ordering of the eigenvectors, and that's because you have this connection between the columns of C and the columns of D. You'll also get the right ordering of these eigenvalues that way as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So, there's one caveat to this process, and that is, I'll show you the step that occurred. If we have a bunch of eigenvectors of A, and I form a matrix D using the eigenvalue, well, the ith diagonal entry of A, let's suppose I've chosen that so that it always corresponds to the eigenvalue of the ith column of the matrix C. If that's true, this identity will hold. Now, it goes back to those matrix multiplication identities. The tricky part is that in order to get the second equation, C minus first times A times C is equal to D, I have to multiply this identity by the inverse of C. But as we've seen, matrices do not always have inverses. And so that's why I put this condition in bold font, because I can't get from this valid equation to this equation I want unless I know that the matrix C is invertible. So the one caveat to this construction, to our being able to diagonalize a matrix, is when we can, in our construction of the matrix C, we might not be able to construct an invertible matrix, in which case this is going to break down. But what I'm going to show you next is exactly where it breaks down, how we can spot that a little bit more easily. So let's move forward to where we're at here. We've worked through this example, and now what I want to remind you of is how can we make sure that a matrix C that we construct using the eigenvectors of a given matrix A, how can we make sure that that's actually an invertible matrix? And so I remind you of a theorem. the so-called fundamental theorem of invertible matrices that gives us criteria for when a matrix has an inverse. Well, we had a bunch of criteria. The one I want to focus on here is this fourth criteria, that the rank of the matrix C has to equal the size of the matrix. So to utilize that condition, so condition four, that C is invertible, well, that's that the rank of the matrix C has to equal n. So this is already an n by n matrix. So what we need is for this matrix to have what we call full rank. And of course, the rank is also the dimension of the column space of C. And so that's going to equal the number of basis vectors. For the column space of C. And so what do we need? We're going to need n linearly independent column vectors, all right? Because the dimension of column space is going to be determined by the number of basis vectors we need. Well, those basis vectors, we're going to need exactly n of them. And what effectively that means is we're going to need the columns. If we have a matrix that's invertible, the columns of C have to be linearly independent. So in other words, we have a sixth criteria. C is invertible if and only if all its columns are linearly independent. All right, so in the case at hand, we're going to be creating a matrix C using eigenvectors of a given matrix. So what we need and so in order to get an invertible matrix, C constructed from, well, our diagonalization algorithm says we should be constructing this matrix C from the eigenvectors of A. So this invertible matrix C is constructed from the eigenvectors of A as columns. So the question is this matrix C is going to be invertible only if its columns are all linearly independent. But the way we're intending to construct this matrix is using eigenvectors of A to get the columns. And so what we're going to need is n linearly independent eigenvectors. And so that's going to be the basic criterion for when matrix A is going to be diagonalizable. We can always satisfy the identity AC is equal to C times D. We can always satisfy this identity simply by creating the matrix C from the eigenvectors of A, and then creating the matrix D by just pairing up the eigenvectors corresponding to eigenvectors of A with their eigenvalues. But the problem is to actually get an invertible matrix C so that this identity holds, because the identity that we want, C A to minus first C is equal to D, that only works when C is invertible. And the argument we've made in the last couple slides then is that we can satisfy this identity when we create C from eigenvectors and D from eigenvalues, and we have enough linearly independent eigenvectors so that in fact this inverse matrix C exists. And so what happens then is the following. A matrix A is going to be diagonalizable if and only if it has enough linearly independent eigenvectors. It needs as many linearly independent eigenvectors as we have columns in the original matrix. All right, so that's the basic principle by which we'll diagonalize matrices. All right, so I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop here today, even though it's 4 minutes early. It's also, my understanding, it's the weekend before Easter. It's the Friday before Easter, so I'll let you guys go maybe 4 minutes early. But what we will do on Monday, well, we've seen A is diagonalizable if and only if A has, so this is an n by n matrix, n has at least, well, it can only have at most n as well. If and only if A has n linearly independent eigenvectors. And then what I'll do on Monday is we'll simplify these criteria. So answering this question, does A have n linearly independent eigenvectors? Well, to figure that out, you're going to have to find all the eigenvectors of A and count them. What I'm going to do on Monday is give you some simpler criteria so you can detect whether or not a matrix is diagonalizable or not without having to do an explicit computation of all its eigenvectors and eigenvalues. So we'll simplify this criterion for special cases. So, you know, for example, it's going to turn out that if your matrix is symmetric, meaning it's equal to a transpose, then the matrix is always diagonalizable. In that particular example, while seemingly special, you have to work with a matrix that looks the same when you convert rows into columns, that turns out to be pretty common in physics and in engineering. And so it's good to know that if we have a symmetric matrix, that this diagonalization is always going to work for us. All right, but I'll stop here today, and we'll pick up in class. I'll be returning to OSU on Monday. We'll pick up with this discussion on Monday. Okay, so have a good weekend, and I will see you on Monday.